29th at 6:30 at the First Unitarian Church, 1211 Southwest Main Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to present the live broadcast for the 26th annual Good in the Hood Multicultural Music, Arts, and Food Festival. This three-day celebration kicks off Friday, June 22nd, with the Good in the Hood Parade and Festival continuing Saturday, June 23rd, and ending Sunday evening, June 24th. Good in the Hood is back at King School Park at Northeast Grand Avenue. Tune into KBOO starting Saturday afternoon on June 23rd for the live broadcast. More information about Good in the Hood can be found on the kboo.fm website on the home page.
Tune into KBOO on Tuesday, June 12th from noon to 8 p.m. for the 20th Annual Homelessness Marathon. Programming includes reports about the fight against poverty for women, youth homelessness, indigenous homelessness, solutions that are working in Finland, and much more. Please call in to talk about your own experiences at 866-LEFT-OUT or 866-533-8688. That's the Homelessness Marathon, Tuesday, June 12th from noon to 8 p.m. here at your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Northwest Deaf Arts Festival on Saturday, June 16th at Mississippi Studios in Portland. The Northwest Deaf Arts Festival consists of a family-friendly matinee show as well as an adult-only 21 and over evening show. Performers include hip-hop artist Sean Forbes, dancer Antoine Hunter, poet Raymond Luzak, and more. Again, that's the Northwest Deaf Arts Festival on Saturday, June 16th at 2 p.m. and 6 p.m. Mississippi Studios is located at 3939 North Mississippi Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The Personnel Committee will meet on the second Monday of each month at 6 p.m.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor IRANFORM, U.S. Withdrawal from Nuclear Agreement and Path to War, on Friday, June 29th at 6:30 at the First Unitarian Church in Portland. The Iran Forum will feature Jamal Abdi, Executive Director of the National Iran American Council, journalist Reese Ehrlich, and local speakers in a discussion about withdrawing from the Iran nuclear deal. The sponsoring groups are involved in prevention of war and in supporting diplomacy and friendship with the people of Iran. Again, that's the Iran Forum U.S. Withdrawal from the Nuclear Agreement and Path to War on Friday, June 29th at 6:30 at the First Unitarian Church, 1211 Southwest Main Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Cirque de Schilling 1 year anniversary on Saturday, June 23rd from 2 to 6 p.m. at the Schilling Cider House in Portland. The Cirque de Schilling is an adult-only cider carnival featuring over 25 different ciders, as well as a dunk tank, ring toss, face painting, and much more. Again, that's the Cirque de Schilling one-year anniversary on Saturday, June 23rd from 2 to 6 p.m. at the Schilling Cider House, 930 Southeast 10th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. The time is 6.04 p.m. You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's time for Labor Radio.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio, of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm your host, Stephen Siegel, here with co-host Rachel Haynes. Hey, Rachel.
Hey.
We are broadcasting around the world from Portland, Oregon. Both of us are public school teachers, and we host every second Monday of the month, where we typically interview teachers and talk about what's going on in their schools and in their unions. Joining us today in the studio, we have Christine Emanuele. Did I say your name correctly?
You did.
Oh, good. Hi. Welcome, Christine.
Thank you.
And listeners, I'm just going to let you know that a little later on, we're going to have a teacher from Puerto Rico, head of the union there. Her name is Mercedes Martinez, and she will be joining us at some point. We had some technical difficulties, and we will be joined by her in a little bit. So, Christine, tell us a little bit about your teaching background and experience.
So, as far as teaching background, I started in North Carolina as an ESL specialist, but I didn't have a teacher's license. Once I left North Carolina and went back to Puerto Rico, Dallas ISD from Texas went to Puerto Rico to recruit people that were prepared with a college background but didn't necessarily have to be teachers. They just were in big need of bilingual teachers.
Okay.
And they would get us certified once we got to Dallas to work. So that's what I did. And in Dallas, I worked as a public school teacher for 3 years in mm-hmm. a bilingual school setting. Then I went back to Puerto Rico 2 years, and in Puerto Rico, I got the opportunity to work as a Waldorf teacher, which is completely different than public school education.
Mm-hmm.
I worked in a school called Semillas para una Nueva Humanidad, and then from there, Portland Public Schools went to Puerto Rico to recruit teachers, and because the economic crisis was already there, I was struggling. I'm a mother of two boys, and so
yeah.
I needed to be supported economically for them, and I came to Portland, and I've been here. This is my third year.
This is your third year here.
Yes.
Okay. Tell us what inspired you to become a teacher.
I studied human resources and accounting, and I'm not a person to be sitting down in an office from 8 to 5.
Mm-hmm.
I also had my two boys, and once I got into North Carolina to be an ESL specialist and I started being involved in the whole public system, it really intrigued me, and that's what triggered that.
Yeah, great. And so you did spend some of your time, so you sort of sandwiched some teaching in Puerto Rico between Dallas and Portland. Talk a little bit about what it was like to teach in Puerto Rico.
Yes, well, because my school was a Waldorf school, it is completely different than public education, and the mm-hmm. way we worked there, it was a 9-to-3 school. We learned by the river. I was the English teacher from 2nd to 4th grade. My class were 8 students, so a completely different setting than what we face in public education.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, thank you.
So I will be asking you about sort of the context. Can you give us a context for the economic crisis in Puerto Rico and explain how the debt was incurred that's being repaid through austerity measures now?
So, for our economic crisis, we have to go all the way back to like the 1920s, where they first introduced the Jones Act, which is the law that makes us have U.S. ships bringing in our products. And so Puerto Rico, before the United States invaded Puerto Rico, we had all kinds of agriculture going throughout the island. Once the United States invaded us, they did exactly what they've done with Hawaii. They just started monocultivo, which is...
Monoculture.
Where, yes, mm-hmm. monoculture. And so that it's a negative impact on agriculture. So we had to start bringing products from other places. And what Jones Act does is that it's... If there were products coming in from Panama, they would have to come all the way to the United States, even though they're very close to us. And then from the United States, ship it again to Puerto Rico. So we have all that cost mm-hmm. put into our ships. And that has been since the 1920s. Now, as far as like another way of explaining the context of the economic crisis is colonialism. The political farce of the so-called sovereignty of the Associated Free State, which led to total and absolute dependence on the acquisition of the debt. The issuance of unpayable bonds, the irresponsibility and absolute negligence of the U.S. Federal Congress. Farce electoral democracy that cannot be given in a colony. All this led by Puerto Rican Creole bourgeoisie. The bourgeoisie composed the political, corporate, and ascendant class of Puerto Rico and the media, the press. Mm-hmm. All this intertwined was what created the perfect design for this crisis. Pretty much crony capitalism.
And can you just say a little bit about that debt that is now being put on the shoulders of, the public service workers and citizens of Puerto Rico.
So the Puerto Rican people have been really struggling with that because we need for that debt to be, what is the word for this?
When you need it to go away.
Yes, we right? do. We do need to have it dismissed, but. When you search into something and figure out why and where the money was spent, there's a specific word for that.
Auditing?
Audited. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the Puerto Rican people have been fighting to have that debt audited in order to figure out where that money went because we have no idea. Mm. So that's pretty much what I can say about that. We don't know where that money went to.
I think I read somewhere that a lot of the money that was borrowed has been paid back. The problem is that the interest rates on that borrowing was so high that you owe like 10 times what you borrowed.
Yes. Well, also because of the way they acquired the debt and then sold the bonds of the debt at such a cheap price, and then they wanted to have that paid back in the same amount of money that it was acquired. And so, yeah, that's been a huge impact on how much they are paying. And that is one thing that also a lot of people don't know, like how much money the U.S. brings into the island versus how much money the island provides to the United States. And this is one huge reason why the United States does not want to let us go and be either independent or to become a state.
We want you to grow our coffee beans and what our sugar and
exactly yeah. yes
mm-hmm. And what has the impact been on the people of Puerto Rico, on public schools, universities, hospitals, transportation, retirement pensions, of this ongoing economic crisis and the debt?
So little by little, everything has been pretty much privatized. And the Puerto Rican people, there's 45% poverty rate in Puerto Rico. So I feel that they have their hands are completely like tight, and it has impacted in such a negative way. Right now, suicidal rates have gone up 40-something percent in the island. Mm-hmm. People are just flying away, just like me. Mm-hmm. There's so many people in the United States who really would love to be in the island. That's like where they belong, and they just can't figure out how to make it. So you either stay and be super poor and work that way, or you have to leave, mm-hmm. unless you are a person, a rich person, which is the least amount of people, of course. There is also another part of the crisis. I forgot to mention this. There has been a tax program for the rich people to come over to Puerto Rico, and they only need to live in the island like 186 days out of the whole year, and they get like a 4% corporate tax, which is nothing.
Yeah, nothing.
And so there's been a lot of that going on, bringing into the island rich people, not only from the United States, but from all over the world. And of course, that has also a huge impact, because these people will go into the poor communities. And like, for example, there's a lot of poor communities around the coast with beachfront properties. The properties are falling apart, but these used to be the fishermen, which now they hardly can find jobs either, because things have gotten so corporate in the island that restaurants rather get their foods from a big chain of food suppliers, because it'll be cheaper than the actual fishermen that will get the fresh fish. And these rich people will come into the poor communities, and they will show these poor people their money, like, and buy a beachfront property for $20,000. But the poor people are like desperate, so they will take the $20,000. And then from there, it just, they build a huge house, and then the rest of the community can't afford to live there anymore. And which that is happening, I think, all over the place. But yeah, that's a big thing happening in Puerto Rico also.
So you've touched on this a bit, but who are the big winners and losers in this neoliberal agenda in Puerto Rico?
The rich people, the corporate, the politicians. There is, for some reason, some a lot of corruption in our politics, and politicians will also go into the poor communities and do all this propaganda and even pay them off for them to vote for these people. And so, of course, the rich people keep getting richer and the poor keeps getting poorer, and that's what's happening.
It's happening all over, but it feels like in Puerto Rico it's one of the places where it's really, it's sort of neoliberalism on steroids, so to speak. If you're joining us, if you've joined us since we began, we are listening to KBOO Portland. This is Labor Radio, and we're talking with Christine Emanuele, a teacher whose home is Puerto Rico, but she's been in Portland for 3 years now. Talk a little bit more. Let's really focus in on schools a little more. I know that you didn't work in a public school, but what's it looking like in terms of what's happening with public schools? What was happening before Maria, and what's happening since?
So public schools have been taking a real toll. Before Maria, every year they have been just shutting down schools and shutting down schools. Actually, I went to the NEARA last year, and I passed a new business item where the NEA is supposed to send out a public press release letting everybody know how they are against everything that's happening, not only with the public schools, but all the austerity measures and everything like that. At that time, they were, I believe, trying to shut 180 schools. And this is last year, July last summer. Well, this year, the new public education secretary, Julia Kelleher, has proposed to shut down almost 300 schools. Mm. They have already shut down like 160 of those 300 schools.
Okay.
They are trying to turn all of those schools into charter schools with vouchers. I just recently read about one specific public school that was sold to a very rich entity for $1. And this public school was named after a beautiful Puerto Rican poet, Julia de Burgos. Not only was it named after that beautiful person, but also it had an amazing mural done by a very also well-known Puerto Rican painter. And the first thing they did was get rid of that mural. And that is really sad.
Yeah.
It seems like they want our, even our culture to be completely shut down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow. And so what's happening then when the schools shut down and then they're not immediately open, so then what do the kids do when their school is shut down?
Yeah, that is a very difficult situation because we have a lot of rural places that where roads are very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
People are very poor. They don't have transportation. Public transportation doesn't really work a whole lot in the island. It only pretty much works in the metropolitan area. And so they're just stranded. It's very difficult for a lot of them to get to school, so they just don't go.
Okay. Or they spend hours
trying to
get to some school.
Yes.
Okay. And have these charter schools been opening up? Are they opening?
Not yet that I know of, yeah.
Okay.
They're just planning for next year.
Okay. And so who's going to go to these schools?
That's a great question. because there's also the situation in the island where they have brainwashed us, like telling us as is public education doesn't really work, the schools are not good enough, teachers are not good enough. And so a lot of people rather put their children in private schools.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm guessing if they are going to do the charter schools, a lot of this private schools will be affected by it too, because maybe it'll be a better deal for parents to get them into those charter schools versus the private schools.
And what about the teaching force? I mean, I know that there have been huge layoffs of public school teachers. And what about who, I mean, have you heard anything about who will be working in these charter schools?
I have heard that they are trying to bring people from the United States. Actually, I've not only for that, but in Puerto Rico, there's a lot of people that are very well prepared. We have a nice percentage of college graduates and professionals. But for some reason, the Department of Education has decided to put all this big administrative job postings for the United States people, not for the island. So they post all these big positions in places that only the people from the United States can see it and not the Puerto Rican people. And I believe that for charter schools, they are doing that, and not only doing that, but they're also trying to do what Dallas ISD did with me, like just recruit people that have a college background and are professionals and then get them certified while they're there.
Okay.
So that actually is a great segue to the next question I wanted to ask, which is the response of communities, of families, students, teachers. I mean, it kind of seems if it's a situation where teachers don't really have anything to lose by fighting back if their profession is kind of being decimated and not offered opportunity to continue in that field.
Yeah, teachers and communities have been really fighting this. The downside of it is that the government has completely shut us down as far as hearing our voices. They have militarized the police, and whenever we try to go out and express our opinion and try to change things, the government will just release the police on us and do real damage. And so that has a lot of people with fear also, mm-hmm. and not coming out to fight for their rights.
And I've seen some communities are actually going to their schools that are being shut down, right?
Yes, and they are going to the schools that are shut down, and they are trying to take over. There's a lot of communities that are trying to take over their schools. Yeah, not only that, but also after Hurricane Maria, there were so many schools that had already been shut down, and they're just there abandoned. So they have been using a lot of these buildings for shelter because there's so many people without houses still. Mm-hmm. So yeah, they're just taking over the buildings and doing what they think it's right as a community.
I've just been really struck by some of what I've read and watched and some of the media. Not that the media, mainstream corporate media, has covered it all that well or very in depth, but that the media portrays what's happening there, the economic situation, as this crisis that it's like this natural disaster. But from everything that you've said and from what I've read as well, there's nothing natural about this, right? This is a plan. This
exactly.
is a plan moving forward. These aren't, you know, closing schools is not this natural consequence of what's happening. It's all part of this plan.
Yes, I have always said that the United States want to have Puerto Rico be the Hawaii of the Caribbean. So it is definitely a plan that has been working forever, because in the 50s we had a huge amount of Puerto Ricans leaving the island, also coming here. Now, Hurricane Maria has been like an amazing, perfect situation for this plan to continue and be even faster. It is definitely a plan. They are shutting us down. They want us out of the island, us natives, and that they want to convert it into a rich people's, white people,
mm-hmm.
Hawaii of the Caribbean.
Yeah.
So on that note, the people who are the oversight committee and Julia, what's her name?
Julia Kelleher.
Yeah. Are they Native Puerto Ricans?
They are not. And they're actually making such huge amounts of money. And the Puerto Rican teachers haven't had a raise,
mm-hmm.
a salary raise in like the past 10, 15 years. They just, I believe, decided on a little raise, and I think it was going to be something like $300 or something like that.
So, sadly, we have to end this conversation. It was extremely interesting. But if you could just really quickly say something that people can do to support teachers and the struggle in Puerto Rico.
Well, there are a lot of schools that still don't have anything. After the hurricane, if you could get in touch with Mercedes Martinez, the president of the Federation, the Teachers Federation of Puerto Rico, so that she can let you know how to best help. Also, just in solidarity with us, maybe do a post for the teachers so that people get to know what the struggles are.
Well, thank you so much, Christine, for joining us on KBOO, and thanks to our engineer. Thank you, audience, for tuning in tonight. Thank you, Stephen. This is Rachel Haynes. You've been listening to Labor Radio. Tune in next Monday and every Monday at 6 o'clock to catch another Labor Radio show.
Thank you.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.